Hello and welcome to Banfield. And just like that, Chris Noth has been fired. The producers of The Equalizer, a popular CBS show, decided to let him go after a third woman has come forward with claims the actor sexually assaulted her in 2010. According to the Daily Beast, the woman says Noth forced himself on her in the back office of a Midtown restaurant in New York City. Noth had been enjoying a resurgence in fame lately because of this, the Sex and the City reboot. But his famous co-stars from that show tweeted a statement today in support of his accusers. And the statement reads, "We are deeply saddened to hear the allegations against Chris Noth. We support the women who have come forward and shared their painful experiences. We know it must be a very difficult thing to do, and we commend them for it." The statement came from the Twitter account of Kristen Davis, but it was signed by Cynthia Nixon and Sarah Jessica Parker as well. Noth had previously been accused by two other women. One says Noth raped her in a West Hollywood apartment in 2004 when she was 22. She says the publicity for the Sex and the City reboot was the trigger on this. The second woman claims that Noth attacked her at his Greenwich Village apartment in New York back in 2015. Joining us now is women's rights and victims' rights attorney Gloria Allred, and also with us is Stacey Honowitz, assistant state attorney for the Sex Crimes and Child Abuse Unit in Florida. She's also the author of multiple children's books, including My Privates Are Private. Gloria, I'm going to begin with you if I can. Is there anything to the timing of all of this? Even Chris Noth himself is pointing to it as being suspicious because he's all over the news with the Sex and the City reboot and then the Peloton ad, et cetera, et cetera.
I don't find it suspicious at all. And in fact, it's quite natural that seeing him would trigger their memories, if that's in fact what happened. And I've represented victims for many, many decades, victims of sexual assault, rape, child sexual abuse, sexual harassment. And they often share with me that, in fact, seeing the accused on the news or in some kind of promotion reminds them of something they tried to forget, Ashley. And that is the assault that they suffered but never went to the police about, but sometimes told their friends about.
Yeah. So, Stacey, I'm going to get you to jump in here in that, you know, this is really your bailiwick, sex crimes, and you know the intricacies of it. I was interested to see that his co-stars in the Sex and the City reboot within days came out supporting the accusers, and they'd been working with Chris Noth for the better part of the last 20 years. Is that something that a prosecutor like you would take note of? Is that inconsequential? Is it material? Is it important?
Well, listen, if I was trying this case, if this case was in the state attorney's office, the idea that some of his friends came forward that worked with him previously and said that they supported the other side really wouldn't have much bearing on the case, because they're taking the, you know, these women are coming forward and they're saying, look, it's difficult to come forward and talk about these things and we support them. What I think is very important to know about all of these, and we see so many of these cases now, is this is why it's so important that if someone is assaulted sexually and attacked, that they do report it. I know it's difficult. I know it's hard. Gloria knows, and I know that sometimes several years go by before somebody comes forward. But this is what happens. You know, it's the court of public opinion now. So people are saying nasty things about the victims, saying, listen, why is the timing? Why are they coming forward? Why didn't they come forward before? Sex and the City had two movies. There were two other times they could have been triggered. And people are saying about him, he's not getting a fair shot at this. All he can come forward and say, I didn't do it. So when you have big cases like this and the court of public opinion and the media gets so wrapped up and involved, it doesn't really benefit either party. And that's the sad part about it. These girls waited a long time. They didn't talk about it. They're not going to get a fair shake. And he's not going to get a fair shake because he's the guy that's accused.
I mean, in that respect, that's an interesting perspective, kind of lose-lose for everybody in the equation. Gloria, if the Coast Guards, you're seeing them on your screen, I mean, gosh, it feels like a lifetime ago when they were that young and Sex and the City was at its at apex. If they came out that quickly in support of the accusers, literally within a week, right? That's very fast. That's basically, hey, we're doing this. We feel this strongly about it. We know him. We've worked with him for, you know, two decades, but we don't need to see any more facts. We agree right now the accusers are the ones we need to support. What does that tell you about those women on the screen and their decision to continue working with him after all those dates? Because these dates go back 15 years, right? And the movies are within that time, and certainly this reboot is within that time.
Well, I don't know what they knew, and if they knew something when they knew it, and that is important. But I think what is important is really what Mr. Noth is alleged to have done to these women who have come forward. That, I think, should be the focus, because there are allegations of gender violence, and that is why this has to be taken very, very seriously. I would respectfully disagree with just a little bit of what Stacey said. I think that for many of the accusers who have come forward, and I have not spoken to them, but my guess is that they expected there would be some backlash, but still, they now can see that coming forward has resulted in some consequences for him. And perhaps they feel satisfied to know that if they hadn't come forward, there would not have been consequences, but because they did, they're now seeing him losing the opportunity to continue on The Equalizer, being dropped by his talent agent, and perhaps other consequences as well.
Well, that is an interesting point. And Stacey, honestly, you know, both of you women work within the confines of American jurisprudence. We have one of the best systems of the world. Our system of justice is, you know, it has its flaws, but it's excellent. Believe me, I've been elsewhere where it is not so excellent. However, none of this is within that realm. And Stacey, that's got to be troublesome when we talk about what Gloria just outlined. Boom goes the equalizer. Boom goes the reputation. Boom goes the opportunity to earn a living for his family. No trial, no evidence presented, no jury of his peers, no judge, no sentence, just court of public opinion and Twitter.
I mean, that's really what it's become. I mean, we really have taken the courtroom out of the picture. When you have these high profile cases involving high profile people, we have everyone now who's sitting behind a computer, tweeting away, not knowing the facts, like you said, only what they're reading in the press, small facts about what happened, and they're making a decision. And, you know, it's not fair. It's not fair to either side, and I'll tell you why. Suppose this did go into a courtroom, then you have to go through every juror. Well, you do anyway. You have to ask them what they know about the case. But if it's constantly in the media about when it happened, where it happened, why it happened, why they didn't come forward, I mean, it is really puts the victim in a bad position, because people want to know. Gloria will tell you, in any of these cases, when you're dealing with rape on a delayed basis, I deal with it in kid cases and adult cases, people want to know. They kind of put themselves in the position of the victim, and they say, well, I would have gone to the police right away. Well, I would have reported it. As we know, that's not the case. Rape victims are of a different breed. It's very difficult to talk about these facts. But what I'm saying is, when you only deal with it in the court of public opinion, everybody has an opinion. Everybody has jumped to conclusions without knowing certain things. And that's where the problem really, really lies. That's why in these cases, like I said, it's very difficult. If you are, I'm always telling people, I'm always saying to them, if you've had something happen to you, if you've been assaulted, I know it's tough. I know it's difficult. I know these facts are difficult to talk about, but what happens is there's a delay in evidence that we as prosecutors won't be able to have. do what you can to try to report it as quickly as you can.
So let me just read what Chris Noth tweeted out.
True that most women
don't. Gloria, I'm going to ask you about it. I'm going to ask you about it in a second. I just want to get Chris Noth's side on here. He hasn't commented yet, I should mention, on this third accuser, and he hasn't commented yet on being fired from the Equalizer. But when the two accusers came out to the Hollywood Reporter, he sent out this. And it's, you know, pretty strident. It says, "The accusations against me made by individuals I met years, even decades ago, are categorically false. These stories could have been from 30 years ago or 30 days ago, but no always means no. That is a line I did not cross. The encounters were consensual. It's difficult not to question the timing of these stories coming out. I don't know for certain why they're surfacing now, but I do know this. I did not assault these women." So that's Chris Noth's comment. And again, that's before this third complainant came forward. So Gloria, you know, what Stacey said is so intriguing that people jump right away to comment. And the co-stars of And Just Like That put out their you know, their tweet today. I'm wondering, Gloria, if, and you know the media, you've been in this game for as long as I have. If you don't come out against someone who's accused, are you then considered by the court of public opinion to be in compliance? And silence is violence. I mean, are they between a rock and a hard place at this point if they don't sort of meet the public on social media with some kind of, agreement?
Well, let's face it. The persons who allege that they are victims are not in the same position, for the most part, as the powerful person, the famous person that they are accusing. And so many of them may have felt that they would not have been believed if they came forward. And we also know that even when persons who allege they are victims file police reports, often the prosecutor feels there's not sufficient evidence to prosecute. And especially where it's a high-profile person who's being accused, often prosecutors will feel there has to be evidence to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt, and even more, kind of a beyond a reasonable doubt plus, in order to win a high-profile case before a jury. But in addition, in this court of public opinion, we also have Beverly Johnson's seeking a restraining order, a temporary restraining order, in the 90s, alleging that Chris Noth hit her in the chest when they were dating each other, and also hurt her ribs and bruised her. And she was granted the temporary restraining order, and it ended in a permanent mutual restraining order. But the allegations that she asserted in order to obtain that temporary restraining order are very, very troublesome. And, you know, if it's true, then it indicates somebody who has anger management issues, at least with her and with the other allegations, perhaps with other women as well.
Gloria, has anyone come out to you to ask if you would represent them, or has anyone broached you for any conversations about Chris Noth, other than the Beverly Johnson one that you just mentioned?
And I know Beverly Johnson, I don't represent her. I certainly have been contacted by others who have allegations against Chris Noth. And I'll just leave it at that.
I would understand that you wouldn't be able to say names, but can you give me a little bit more detail?
Not at this time.
Okay.
But
well,
thanks
that
for
is
asking.
An open invitation to return back on the show. I'm
and
always
going to
keep tabs on
you. It's common. It's common for me to be contacted.
Understand,
and I
yeah.
always believe everyone should know what their rights are and what their responsibilities are and what the benefits and risks are of any option they wish to pursue.
Gloria, how many women have contacted you about Chris Noth?
I don't want to disclose that at this time. Thank you, though.
Okay, can't blame a girl for trying. Stacey, you were trying to get in there. What were you going to say?
Yeah, listen, I want to say one thing. I know Gloria for a very long time, and she knows that in any case, the standard is beyond and to the exclusion of every reasonable doubt. It doesn't matter if you're a celebrity or if you're, you know, Joe Schmo down the street has been accused of something. That's a prosecutor's standard, beyond and to the exclusion of every reasonable doubt. She's correct. There's many cases where if it's a high-profile person, maybe the victim is nervous to come forward. But what I'm saying is this. All I'm saying is I'm just telling people that it does make things a little bit easier if the victim files a police report and goes to the state attorney's office, whether or not we decide to pick up the case, if we think there's sufficient evidence, it's better to say I went and I tried than I never went at all. That's the bottom line. So that's what I was trying to say. It's always
beyond.
We don't
change
the standard for celebrity
but we shouldn't feel, and I know you're not saying this, Stacey, that if a person does not file a criminal complaint, which is optional for her, desirable but not required, that it doesn't mean that it didn't happen to her or that it did happen to her. That has to be evaluated separately. And also, people should know that going to the police is not the only option. They can also, you know, contact civil attorneys. Many people contact me. I'm not a criminal prosecutor. I'm a civil attorney. And then I can tell them what their options are and speak in confidence to them, which that does not happen if they speak to the police or to a prosecutor. There's no confidentiality. Again, I'm not saying they shouldn't file a police report, but it's not required.
It's good advice, only to put it on the record contemporaneously, because I do know a lot of women who go through this are absolutely terrified of all of the process, not just the litigation aspect of it, but the aftermath of it and the public nature of it. So a private attorney might be just the ticket for those who are afraid, just to put it on the record in real time. Gloria, thank you. Stacey, thank you. Appreciate. And Gloria, I'm calling you. You know, you can't just dangle a little tiny bit in front of me and then not expect me to call you back, right?
Always happy to talk with you.
Thanks. All right. Thanks, ladies. Do appreciate it. All right. So I'm going to continue on this vein, although a slight veer, because career death penalties, they're not so unusual when men are accused of rape, if you think about Matt Lauer or R. Kelly or Bill Cosby. But some men have lost their livelihoods for sexual behavior that is not close to rape. Think about Al Franken and Aziz Ansari and Louis C.K. Franken and Ansari have slowly made their comebacks after several years in the desert. And now Louis C.K. dropped a surprise Saturday night announcement that he has a brand new special coming out called I'm Sorry. Louis admitted to masturbating in front of multiple women after asking their permission, which, while gross, is certainly not illegal. And here's what Sarah Silverman had to say about this back in 2017.
It's a real mind f- you know, because I love Louis, but Louis did these things. Both of those statements are true. So I just keep asking myself, can you love someone who did bad things? Can you still love them?
Yet, cancel culture came for Louis C.K. 4 years ago, and he's been sitting on the sidelines ever since. So the question is, how long does someone need to be in cancel jail? Comedian Pete Dominic knows how careful his colleagues have to be right now and how they tread a very fine line at their work when just even an off-color joke can cost them their jobs. He is the host of the podcast Stand Up with Pete Dominic. Pete, the podcast is usually taped, but I'm always worried about those who are live. And I'm going to remind you, you're live right now. But this is a very frightening time to be you, in terms of just what you, even supporting or not supporting someone like Louis C.K. or someone like Chris Noth. And I'm just wondering if you want to weigh in on that for a moment. The notion that the Sex and the City ladies within days have given us that statement, and then others don't. Others just stay quiet.
Yeah, well, Ash, great to see you. Thanks for having me on. I came up through the comedy ranks with Louis. I mean, he was far ahead of me, but I hung out with him several times. And, you know, I would push back on what you just said. Like, I'm not afraid at all. I'm not afraid of being canceled. I'm not afraid of saying the wrong thing. I love being live with you on your excellent show. I have no concerns at all because I'm not going to do and say things that I don't have those kind of impulses. I'm certainly not going to do those things. I think that what Louis, you know, did, he is not remotely close to the allegations against Chris Noth. And furthermore, Louis completely admitted to doing it. He said these stories are true. He apologized. But then he kind of walked it back. He's kind of tried to have it both ways. A lot of people don't feel like he's remorseful enough. But I think the conversation really has to be about the market and where, you know, this culture and this society is at. You know, Donald Trump said, if you're famous, they let you get away with anything. That's not necessarily true. Certainly a lot of people have gone down and even gone to jail for crimes they've committed that are super famous people. Harvey Weinstein, Bill Cosby, although he's gotten out. But, you know, Louis C.K. is a completely different story. And I think that the question is, why are people, you know, going to see him? Why would people vote for a Donald Trump? Why would people pay to see someone who's done some of these things? And you know, that I think that's where the conversation has. And there's a lot of nuance that needs to be and differences.
It's interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, it is fascinating when you say, let's let the marketplace decide, right? So as part of the marketplace, we have this crazy new thing called social media. And, you know, social media is really the catalyst for these cancellations that come so lightning fast, like almost, you know, at the back of the head, and they knock you out before you even, you know, heard what's being, you know, alleged against you. So in that respect, you know, if the marketplace is going to decide, then should Louis Keyes, like, does Louis deserve this attempt at a comeback?
I mean, I believe that everybody deserves redemption personally, but I do think that it matters if someone shows remorse and shows conceit. You apologize to your wife and you don't mean it. She's not going to believe you. Believe me, my wife would tell you that right away, as you know. But I think you've got to be actually, honestly, you know, apologizing and be accepted for it. And he has gone on. I mean, he's, you know, his new special is called Sorry. He's selling merch called Sorry. And yet he doesn't really seem like he's that sorry. But maybe that's, you know, his opinion. The point is he's selling tickets everywhere he goes. People who are accused of, allege, or even admit to sex crimes get elected to office all kinds of different offices. And so that's the culture that we have to decide. You can pressure a theater, you can pressure a platform, but I don't really buy a lot of the cancel culture stuff. I mean, Louis hasn't been canceled. He's killing. He's one of the funniest comedians in the world, and a lot of people don't care what he did. I do. I wouldn't pay to see him. I wouldn't open for him if he asked. That's my personal opinion. But a lot of people look past the allegations or even the crimes that they admit to because they love what they do on stage, musician, comedian, whatever. And, you know, that's where we're at, and that's an important conversation for us to be having, and I'm glad that you're doing it.
So I'm glad you you mentioned that because we actually did do some research on folks who might consider opening for Louis C.K., which I thought interesting. Yeah, let me show you this little pie chart that we have. We have lots of comedians like you on the show, so we reached out to a lot of them and we said, would you consider opening for Louis? And 84% of those asked said yes. Of the women, though, 50% were, you know, the women were even 50 yes, 50 no, which I thought was super interesting. I want to play something from Dave Chappelle. A lot of people would say, boy, it sure doesn't hurt when you have like the 800-pound gorilla like Dave Chappelle speaking out on your behalf. I'm not so sure. I'm going to ask you about it on the other side because he has his problems too. But here's what Dave Chappelle said on his, I think it was in his special defending Louis C.K. Take a look.
One lady said, Louis C.K. masturbating in front of me ruined my comedy dreams. Word. Well, then I dare say, madam, you may have never had a dream. Come on, man, that's a brittle spirit.
Interesting, a brittle spirit. He calls those in the comedy world who were offended and upset by the actions that Louis C.K. Carried out in front of them. brittle, meaning you had no shot in comedy anyway, so this didn't ruin your career. You have to be way thicker skinned than that. I'm not so sure that that's fair from a man. I hate to say that, but it's a very different kind of action to be booed by the audience and to have people, you know, heckle you than have somebody who's in a position of power in front of you doing something that you're kind of paralyzed to act against because he could really ruin you.
Yeah, that comment by Dave Chappelle is one of my favorite comedians of all time. But I mean, that was a horrible, horrible comment, insufferable. As a matter of fact, I mean, listen, and you put up that pie chart earlier. I know a lot of those female comedians, and I follow their lead because they've dealt with this. These are women who have been, this business is horrible. The comedy business is horrible. There's no HR department like there is at networks or most of the places that people work. I mean, look at what's gone on with Chappelle. He's not accused of doing anything. He's accused of saying things people didn't like. And there was an uprising within Netflix. And that's not the case at the comedy clubs across the country. Those women that said they don't want to open for a guy like Louis C.K. is because they don't want to endorse the way that he has handled this, the way that he's handled this behavior. I mean, and, you know, everybody has their own, is entitled to their own opinion and actions. But I mean, I was, you know, I have been insulted and embarrassed by famous comedians that I've opened for, and I stopped opening for them. It didn't feel good. It wasn't worth it to me, but I also had the luxury to work elsewhere. And I think that's not always the case with everybody. And I think we have to take this at a case-by-case basis, have a thoughtful conversation about it, and try to, you know, put context to it. And I think guys like Louis C.K., if you're successful enough and you're talented enough, people love you enough, you can get away with a lot more. People look past it, and they'll support you. They'll vote for you. They'll pay for tickets. Louis is back. Dave Chappelle never went anywhere. He's suffered, you know, no consequences at all. And I'm not saying that he necessarily should have. I'm saying it's not debatable. I mean, Chappelle's special is the biggest hit on Netflix, and he's opening for the Netflix comedy show. No consequences at all for Dave. And we can talk about why, and we can debate, and we can discuss all of this, and we should. We should keep having a thoughtful discussion. But Twitter, of course, is not the place for it. Places like your show.
Well, I'll tell you what. speaking of the Twitter, just to be fair and balanced here, I do want to give out this one. This one's from Wendy Molyneux. She's a pretty well-known comedy writer as well. She had a very different feel for this topic than Dave Chappelle. She tweeted, Louis C.K. is a sex criminal. I care about the women Louis C.K. hurt, and you should too. So there you have it. There are people on both sides of this debate with Louis C.K., but one thing you can't debate is that he is he's out there, and his special is up and running, and you're right about the merch. He's selling the merch, saying, I'm sorry, too. Hey, Pete, I appreciate your perspective. But go ahead.
Yeah,
what?
Of course. I was just going to say, he can perform almost anywhere he wants. You think there's a venue or a club that's going to turn down his ticket sales? He sells tickets.
Think so. And,
yeah, so, I mean, it you can find that reprehensible and be, you know, like I said, I told you how I feel, but certainly, you know, we disagree on a lot in this country and where we're going to spend our money and who we're going to work with and what our standards are. I believe the standard you walk past is the standard you accept, and you should try to be the change you want to see. And I don't think you should do anything but that. But that's my moral code.
Well, I certainly would buy a ticket to your show. In fact, Pete Dominic, thank you so much. Your podcast is Stand Up with Pete Dominic. Happy holidays to you and your whole family, Pete. Thanks so much for being here. I appreciate it. Still to come, the search for Gabby Petito and her killer was one of the most followed stories of the year. And now her family is turning their tragedy into a gift for others this holiday. Gabby's parents are live with me next. One of the most heartbreaking news stories of the year was also one of the most followed. The search for Gabby Petito captivated the country and launched an online community of supporters who analyzed every detail of the case to try to help find the missing 22-year-old woman. When it was confirmed that Gabby had been killed in Wyoming, supporters shifted their efforts to the search for her fiancé and the only suspect in her murder, Brian Laundrie. When he, too, was found dead on November 23rd by his own hand, many people thought that would be the end of the story, and it could have been. But Gabby Petito's family believed their daughter's legacy deserved a lot more than that. So they launched the Gabby Petito Foundation with a mission to assist victims of domestic abuse and support organizations that are trying to locate other missing people. And boy, have they been busy. Just this week, just days before Christmas, they made three substantial donations to help in that mission. And Gabby Petito's parents join me next. Welcome back to Banfield. The Gabby Petito case got a lot of attention this year and inspired a community of supporters to come together to try to help find the missing 22-year-old woman. And now Gabby's family has started a foundation in their daughter's name to help support that community and encourage others to focus their attention on the many missing persons cases that haven't yet been solved. Tonight, I am joined by Gabby's parents, Joe and Tara Petito. Thank you both for being with me tonight. You know, we're heading into the holidays, and Joe, I've been thinking a lot about you guys. This is a tough time for anybody who's had a difficult year, but for you guys, this has got to be especially tough. But you're doing so much with the foundation. I'm assuming that will get you through these next few days that are going to be tough without Gabby.
No. I mean, listen, we're trying to do stuff to have that positive outcome that we've been, you know, looking for. And we're trying to really make a difference and really help people and inspire others to help people. So we're hoping this and our continued work, you know, does just that.
You've been busy this week, you know, alone. We're reading about three sizable donations from a foundation that really just got started. This is really impressive. Let me list out what you've done. You've given a massive donation to the National Domestic Violence Hotline. You've also given a donation to Safe Space. And then a third one, the Aware Foundation. So Tara, I'm going to get you to explain what the Safe Space and Aware Foundations are. I think most people know what the National Domestic Violence Hotline is, but explain a little bit about the Safe Space and the Aware Foundations and how they connect to you.
Well, the Safe Space is a, I'm so bad at this. it's a local houses in Florida. Joey knows a lot more about it than I do, and I'm sorry, I'm getting so...
It's all right. It's so...
That's okay. It's nerve-wracking being on national TV and all of a sudden getting a quiz from me. Heavens, what was I thinking? But that sounds right. Like, it sounds like, you know, that's a domestic violence shelter. And then the Awareness Foundation, actually, Joe, what's that?
It's actually the only state-certified domestic violence shelter in Florida, which is... And they do awesome work. They support, you know, the three counties that are local to where we are here, and they're awesome. Teresa and Charlotte, I met them and saw the house, and it's just, you know, awesome what they do. And the Aware Foundation, you know.
Well, the Aware Foundation, I contacted right away when Gabby was missing, and they do a lot of work to help find the missing. So they printed out they got a flyer ready for us, and they, I guess, mass produced it and shot it out across the country. So we can get her information out as fast as possible.
That's amazing. So, you know, I'm assuming that these are real, you know, they have a real connection to you. Do you think these foundations, or at least these organizations that you've donated to, could have helped with regard to Gabby's story?
They always can, because they do amazing work. I keep using that word amazing. They really do. I mean, the work that the National Domestic Violence Hotline does is just, I mean, huge. You can't, you know, and they need more help. You know what I mean? Safe Space needs more help. The Aware Foundation needs more help. You know, the amount of missing that happens, you know, throughout every year just in America is huge. You know, so the more that people put out, you know, imagine, you know, a place where celebrities at least once a month put it up. You have, you know, a million people, you know, following you, and you put out a missing person flyer from the Aware Foundation or a story that sticks to it, that compels you to just put something out there. You're going to get a lot more people, a lot more eyes on that person that people are looking for. And that's what the families really need. You know, you just, you know, I got to give a shout out. Snoop Dogg did it. He put out a Cashon Sims over in early October, and she was found the next day. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, it correlated, you know, that fast, but it helps. Every bit helps. And yeah, so I think foundations like the Aware Foundation and Safe Space and the National Domestic Violence Hotline definitely could have helped. You know, it always can help any situation. You know, so it's amazing the work they do.
You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, you know, about the case. And I do understand you don't want to discuss the investigation. You've been very, very clear. That's not your mission now. Your mission is all Gabby, all the way, you know, and her legacy, which I understand. Our viewers are extraordinarily protective over you guys. And they want to make sure that you've got, you know, everything that you need. They often tweet and make comments saying, I hope they're getting what they need from the police as well. If they have questions like the rest of us have questions, are you getting what you need from the police? Are they being communicative with you?
What I'll say is this. We want to continue that, you know, the help that we're getting with, you know, with Twitter and social media and stuff, and getting all the missing out there and all the stuff with Domestic Violence Hotline and Safe Space. We're us as a foundation, we're trying to get more states to take part in NamUs. I mean, NamUs is a Department of Justice funded you know, website where, you know, it's not only, it doesn't just help the missing, you know, with, you know, they have DNA analysis, you know, fingerprint analysis. I mean, they do all this work and only 10 states take part in it. And it's funded by the DOJ. All they got to do is sign up for it. There's an Ashanti alert that's been in law and federally since 2019 that only one state takes part in. One. I mean, that should be. It's the Ashanti alert, for those who don't know, is for an 18 to 64 range, so for the young adults. And only
extremely
one state's taking part.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
huge. Well,
I can
see you have your work cut out for you. And it's, you know, it's really, it's great to know that you've turned this tragedy into such, you know, great work for others, especially, you know, right now at Christmas time. I am sending both of you my love and the love from all the viewers who I know wish they could say it to you personally, but also sending you, you know, special greetings for the holiday season. Joe and Tara, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Ashley.
Always a pleasure. Coming up next, two women, two very high-profile trials, and two juries hard at work, one a former cop and one a former socialite, both facing years locked up. And there are jury questions that may give a hint as to what they're planning to do. That's next. Two very high-profile trials are on verdict watch tonight, one that puts power, wealth, and sex under the microscope, and the other one highlighting policing and race. And both juries asked some pretty curious questions today on day two of deliberation. So let's start with the sex trial. Ghislaine Maxwell, facing 40 years plus in prison for allegations that she helped arrange young women for Jeffrey Epstein, a child sex offender of epic proportions, but also her billionaire boyfriend, boss, and idol. The case has been less than satisfying to those who felt it might finally blow open the web of secrecy that surrounds Epstein's jet-set group of friends who, it's rumored, took part in his crimes against young girls, including Prince Andrew. But that didn't happen. And many who follow the story believe the prosecution's case against Maxwell was weaker than it should have been. Over a year and a half ago, Maxwell was arrested in a raid on her multimillion-dollar New Hampshire home, and in the blink of an eye, she went from a life of luxury that most can only dream of to a cold 8x10 cell in the Brooklyn federal lockup. And that's where she's been in solitary ever since. Bail denied. Today, Maxwell's jury asked the judge if they could reread the testimony of three of the four accusers, and they also asked for FBI notes of a 2007 interview with an accuser. Then they also asked about deliberation timelines, which I think makes perfect sense because Christmas Eve is just 3 days away. So, you know, they want to know what's going on time-wise. Now, in the other case, the jury had a few questions today about Kim Potter's charges as well. She is the suburban Minneapolis police officer who pulled a gun instead of a taser during a routine traffic stop last April. The driver, Dante Wright, had an expired registration, but he also had a warrant out for his arrest. And even though another officer was still partly inside Dante's car, Dante hit the gas and he took off. And in an effort to stop him, Kim Potter deployed what she thought was her taser, but instead was her gun, and she shot and killed Wright. She is charged with first and second degree manslaughter, and she is facing up to 15 years in prison if she's convicted of the more serious charge. So today, Potter's jury asked, if the jury cannot reach a consensus, what steps should be taken? That question. Oh, kind of means that they don't know what they're doing. The judge read them an instruction that they already had. He reread it. You should not render your honest opinion to reach a verdict. They also asked, can zip ties be removed from Potter's gun so that it can be held out of the evidence box? And the judge said yes. So those are very interesting. Hung jury in Potter's case, it's possible. But I have seen them come back and figure it out. So if Potter's acquitted, she likely won't be going back to policing because she resigned from the force shortly after the shooting. She'd been an officer for 26 years. News Nation is going to keep an eye on this. And we are going to bring you those verdicts just as soon as those two juries make up their minds as what they want to do. Okay, time now for this semi-regular quiz that we now give you. And since we're waiting on verdicts for two women, we thought we'd ask you this question. What is the current number of women behind bars in the U.S. of A? Is it 2,000, 22,000, or 222,000? The answer is minutes away. Okay, thank you for being patient. Time for the answer to our quiz. We asked, what's the current number of women behind bars in the United States? I hope you didn't Google this. Was it 2,000, 22,000, or 222,000? And the answer is C, 222,455 to be exact. All told, there are currently 2 million men and women behind bars in the U.S., but in the last 40 years, the rate of incarceration has increased by 500%. Here's what's upsetting. For women, that increase is much, much higher. It's more than 700% since 1980. So way to break that glass cell block, ladies. I'm kidding. Hey, thanks for being with us tonight. We'll see you right back here for Banfield tomorrow night, 9 Central, 10 Eastern.